This podcast contains language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over guess. I'll give you three guesses. The first two don't count. Four Weddings and a Funeral, Part 8. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss?
Ooh, got that. You went high, and I don't know where I went there.
It was perfect. It was perfection. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies and series. Today we are going over Four Weddings and a Funeral, episode eight. I'm sorry. And very excited to reach the ocho.
That sounded dirty. Reach the ocho.
Oh, yeah, the ocho. And I am here with my lovely co-host who tricked me into doing the most complicated episode of the series so far.
Right.
Miss Tamara Kosio.
All part of my evil plot. All part of my evil plot. I saw this series. I looked at it all and I said, you know what the worst episode is? 8. How can I finagle Corinne to get at my other co-host? Who, incidentally, my co-host is my bestie, who, if she were a series, I'd watch all the episodes, even with commercials.
Ooh.
And all her technical difficulties, because this is the second time we are recording this, because her Zoom recorder hates her.
Fortunately, it was just the first half hour, not anything beyond that. But having that technical difficulty both kind of just crushed our souls a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Or a lottle. Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. No, it did. I was like, again?
Okay. I have a very serious question to ask you, though.
Mm-hmm.
Last episode, I brought up how you had Mrs. Frizzle going through your body. And I am wondering if she has had a return visit.
No, pretty good. Yeah, no, it's Wednesday and everything is going fine. Although I do need to take more magnesium, according to my sister, the supplement guru.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. She said that will cure what ails me.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Denise. So your Ozempic journey is going well?
No, actually, I got a new side effect. So aside from the previous side effects where Mrs. Frizzle's not flowing through my body.
Yay.
And not graciously taking all the fat out of my folds and flying it out my butt. I finally am getting the full feeling, like when people say they feel really full.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't happen in the morning. It doesn't happen in the afternoon. It happens around 7 p.m. and then stays until, like, I go to sleep.
Hmm.
So from 7 to whenever I fall off, I am uncomfortably full for the last couple of days, which I'm just like, this is fine, but could it happen, like, earlier in the day so I don't eat so much and get this and then, like, and ride it out? It has to be now? Okay, great.
So are you on the full dosage yet, or are you still on a half dose?
No, still on the half dosage.
Okay. Well, maybe once you get the full, then you'll get a full day of being full.
Oh, yay. Because right now it is not comfortable. So I guess I know it's supposed to let your food digest slower.
Uh-huh.
But it's just weird, the buildup, because I don't have a big breakfast. I don't have a big lunch. And it's not directly after I eat lunch. It's like a few hours after. Then it's like, hey, boom, the food's going to hit your gut and it's going to stay here for a while.
Congratulations on a food baby.
It is a food baby. But then the food baby's gone in the morning. And I'm like, if you could just, like, you know, maybe cut the fullness in half and then, like, carry it over into the morning, that would be great. Thanks. But aside from that little distraction going on, I said this earlier to you, but I've been so terribly bad. As per usual, I'm behind everybody in the world, and I just got the last 3 seasons of Vanderpump Rules, which is my secret obsession, and I have been watching it religiously instead of doing the podcast notes. I am so sorry, Corinne. If anybody out there watches Vanderpump Rules and you're in the know, I am right before everybody, like, breaks up and all this shit hits the fan. So I'm just like, oh, when did all this happen?
First, you need to take a break for Four Weddings and a Funeral, episode 9.
Yes, I do. But that's why you don't have your notes yet, Corinne, because I'm like, I got to get in the what happened to Lala? Katie did what? What happened to Ariana? And my apologies in advance.
Yeah, I can tell you're really sad about it.
I said this earlier, too. I said, Larry loves me because he sat next to me on Saturday and literally binge watched like 6 hours of Vanderpump Rules and swears that Tom and Tom are in love with each other.
You know, we all have the great loves of our lives. And I would consider you one, Tam. Just not romantical, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely have a bromance going on. But mm-hmm. they're like, their dynamic is fun and cute. One's like kind of goofy and happy-go-lucky. And the other one's a little more intense and kind of like likes things his way.
Oh, so Tom and Tom, relationship icons. I got you.
Mm-hmm. Ozempic journey going, okay. What's going on with you, Corinne?
Well, I don't know if you know this, but my sister died a while ago, a few years ago.
I think I heard that through the grapevine. Mm-hmm. By the grapevine, I mean, what the fuck do you think? I know that. I was right there with you, right after it happened.
Yes, yes. So yesterday was her birthday, so.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So I've just been feeling all kinds of feels. And so I have like nothing like funny and exciting to share. And I spent a lovely day with my parents and we worked on a puzzle together and we had cupcakes and Dad made lasagna and it was a good day. But, you know, afterwards I was just like done, you know, I was like, stick a fork in me. Yeah. No. So I just feel kind of sad. Yeah. This is a super exciting part of life. Is working your way through loved one grief over the years. Sorrow, grief, not hassle. So, yeah, that's my thing. And then I felt like I was winning at life because I was so proud of myself. I asked my boss man for the 23rd off because my cousin Tim is coming into town. And it's a Monday. And, like, I never ask for days off of work, basically. And I hate asking for days off of work. And it sucks. Even though he doesn't give me shit about, you know, he doesn't give me shit or anything about it, but it's just like rejection, whatever. Who the fuck knows? I don't like asking.
Right. Yeah.
But he needs advance notice so that things can be set up on the schedule so that they work out better for him. So anyways, I was so proud of myself. I asked my boss man for the 23rd off when I visited my parents on Tuesday at the campground that they were at. And worked on the puzzle with them. I told Mom, hey, I got the 23rd off work so I can have lunch with my cousin Tim and the rest of the family. And Mom texts me today on my way home. Hey, you said the 23rd, but it's on the 30th.
Oh, no.
And so then I just felt like, in combination with a few other things, I just felt like I was failing at life. Because I was just like, God damn it, what is going on? And so, yeah. So that was fun with that realization.
Did you get the 30th off?
Well, no, I haven't talked to my boss man because, you know, it was after work. My mom let me
work. I'm just asking a question.
For the next month, I'm just going to take off Mondays, okay? So I can have glorious 4-day weekends all the time. I wish.
Okay.
So I'm going to be asking him tomorrow for the 30th off, and it'll all work out. And I'm super excited because my boss man has to take his mom to a wedding in, I don't know, Nebraska or something. Somewhere weird. Anyways, he's got to take his mom to a wedding.
No offense to all the Nebraskalinos out there. Nebraska's not weird. She didn't call your state weird. So sorry about that.
Tam is totally right. So that's on Friday, October 11th. And so that's kind of cool because that's basically when the weekend I'm celebrating my birthday. So because somebody is having a baby shower on my birthday. I don't know.
Oh, fuck. I will tell my niece to close her legs and suck it back in so that we can do the baby shower some other time.
Okay. But. Here's the thing. You said to me, Corinna Lina Ling Dong, Squeesh is having a baby shower. And I was like, awesome. And you sent me the super cute invite. And it had like a little Bambi on it. And it was like a vintage deer thing, and it was super cute looking. And I'm reading the invitation, and it says October 5th here. And I was like, Tam, you fucking buried the lead.
I didn't.
It's on her birthday.
Like, maybe she won't notice. Mm-hmm. I wanted mm-hmm. you to just like to see if you wanted to go and then be committed till you saw the date, because I didn't think you'd see the date and be like, fuck that, because I know that we had all kinds of fun, like, on your part, conversations about all the things you were going to do. Oh, is that the baby shower cake? And it just so happened to bring my own candles because it's my birthday. Oh. You want me to proofread the invitation there? You know, that's, oh, they have the baby sizes and what she's going to be each season. Like, you just go ahead and put my sizes on there, too. Just go ahead and pencil them in, and they won't change. So you can just keep them the same.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the baby is difficult because it's like grows. I don't grow. I'm like, good. I'm just one size.
You're actually doing everybody a favor by putting your sizes on there, because it's easier just to buy one size all the way through, top to bottom.
I'm just going to add some stuff to, you know, the baby registry, like a Hitachi magic wand. No, I'm just kidding. Those things are brutal. I couldn't with that. But like, just something that was obviously not baby.
I just got a vision of my poor niece opening up things from her registry at some point in time that got sent to her after the party, and just opening up the Hitachi magic wand and being like, what is this?
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so I'm super excited to be going to that. And I get to see you too, which is like bonus, bonus, bonus. So
bonus, bonus, bonus.
And Alicia did not, you know, she did not say, well, at my baby gender reveal party, Corinne was really inappropriate. She's not welcome. Instead, she said it was okay if I came. So thumbs up to me.
Well, she said she didn't say that to your face. Yeah. But you also weren't putting your own name and candles on her cake. So there's that.
I had them at the ready. And then I was like, I think I'm going to wait for my birthday to do this. And just serendipity came across that I am getting a birthday party that probably has crappy baby shower games at it.
No, I don't think my sister is going to do the crappy baby shower games. There's going to be too many people there, because it's at Junior's house with the Del Toro family. So there's going to be like 173 people there.
Yeah, well, I think that your niece is going to not get a gift from me, and she's just gonna have the gift of my presents. So,
oh, I should make her a baby board like I did all the other cousins. No. I bet she'd like that.
Yeah, she would.
Except, how can I? Oh, I've got to try to finagle it so my sister can secretly ask her all the or I can work it into one of the baby shower games. Be like, yeah, we're playing a baby shower game, Squeesh, where I'm just going to ask you all kinds of questions about you and your pregnancy. Okay, then how does the game work? I'm just going to ask you all kinds of questions about you and your pregnancy. Okay, what's the prize? I'm just going to ask you all kinds of questions about you and your pregnancy. That's how we play. Don't ask questions. Let's just go.
The prize is you get a baby at the end of it. That's the prize.
And a beautifully handcrafted, handwritten board by your talented auntie, who puts all of that beautiful stuff on a chalkboard with flourish and
panache.
Feeling panache and flourish.
Yes. I know that you are a very talented graphic designer, and so that board will look amazing. Mm-hmm. And also, something else that requires you to do a little bit of work and some verbal panache is synopsizing the shit out of episode, it says here 8, but I thought I put down 7. Please.
Uh-huh. You did put 7 and I corrected it because I'm stupid.
You corrected it.
I corrected it on yours. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, she said synopsis for 7. This is episode 8. The synopsis isn't from 7. So I corrected it on my copy and I left the incorrectness on your copy. See what happens when I get distracted by Vanderpump rules. I'm just like, what? We're doing a podcast right now? Okay.
Man, I need to like lure you away with Vander Stiletto rules instead or something like that, because I don't know if I'm ever going to get you back.
Synopsis for part 7, not part 8, part 7. Cash gets the part in a very low-budget community theater production of The Sound of Music. It's so low-budget that not even a bake sale will save it. So Cash gets the idea to try and solicit funds via social media to keep the theater alive. He reluctantly, is that the right word? No, it's not. He
hesitantly,
yes, jinx, pinch, poke, hesitantly sends Maya the link to the fundraising video, and she watches it umpteen times because Cash is a dreamy South Asian Idris Elba type.
Yes, he is.
In another segment of the episode, Maya and Ainsley and the handsome Tony Too go out to a gay bar, which Maya's boss Andrew Ulrich happens to also be at.
Gay bar.
Thank you, Corinne.
You're welcome.
Creating the ambiance needed. Mm-hmm. Tony's all full of piss and vinegar when he sees Andrew calling him an LGBT Rex because his archaic beliefs and tendencies to lean way over to the conservative side. And Corinne is doing very believable T-Rex impressions and movements with her tiny arms. Thank you, Corinne, again for the ambiance that you're just lovingly sharing with us all. And Andrew's taken aback by the unprovoked animosity until Tony too reveals they had an intimate evening 2 Halloweens ago. But Tony guesses that he's not the type of person a stuffy gay politician like Andrew would remember.
He should. Tony too is unforgettable. That's what you are, Tony too. Yes.
And Marcus, Maya's coworker, who was initially disgusted with all the times he heard "so long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, adieu" from Maya's computer because she's watching Cash's video, gets an idea to get on their boss Andrew Aldridge's good side. He suggests that Andrew revamp his public persona and stop being considered an LGBT Rex by supporting something unexpected like the Youth Community Theater, full of all kinds of ethnic talent, and it's the same theater Cash is raising money for. So coincidental. Andrew normally wouldn't go for this sort of thing, but his previous interaction with Tony too spurs his decision to help because he doesn't want to be seen as an old, irrelevant harumph. Bash and Fatima are getting super serious. Not much to Cash's dismay. He's actually pretty cool with the idea. Bash doesn't believe him, and they still maintain their friendship, so that was good.
Yes.
Ainsley finally finishes Bryce, a.k.a. Tony Thrice's condo, and learns that he is into her. She's pretty oblivious until he kisses her in the plant section of a home goods store because he hired her to do his outside yard after she finished with the condo, and instead of being thrilled, she turns him down, stating that she's seeing somebody seriously, which is Garrett, and no, they're not serious.
Everything about Garrett is serious.
No. And then there's Duffy. Dumb Duffy.
Oh, fucking Duffy.
Absolutely unhinged after learning Maya's secret crush is Cash. He drinks all night and slacks off at school all day, giving his students a subpar education, and causes the headmaster to elect him a babysitter. And he incidentally also goes off on Gemma.
Oof.
And lastly, at the conclusion of The Sound of Music's opening night, which Maya 1000% did not tell Ainsley about because Cash and Maya finally share a private, intimate kiss. Ooh. No biggie, cool, nothing to see here, except for the fact that if anyone finds out about it, Maya may lose all of her friends, possibly, but for sure, her best friend, Ainsley. The end.
Yay! Oh my God, I have to share. My friend Sylvia and her husband have been watching Four Weddings and the Funeral so that Sylvia can listen to the podcast, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
And when Duffy threw the nachos over the fucking balcony, Sylvia's husband, Randolph, yelled, "Why would you do that to nachos?" It was a nacho apocalypse.
Yeah. Duffy, like, you don't do that. You could be pissed off and still eat the nachos.
Yeah.
Or better yet, don't throw them over the balcony so your friend could eat the nachos because he's the one that made the nachos. And nachos are a process.
Mm-hmm.
If there's some time and some thought and some effort to put into the nachos.
Yes.
Therefore, if you just like flip them over a balcony, you're a bad friend.
Mm-mm. Then you're flipping me off. If you flip nachos over a balcony around me, then you're flipping me off. Set it right here and I'm sticking to it.
Nacho, you didn't.
That's going to be our tagline throughout this episode. We'll be like, Nacho, you didn't.
Yes. Nacho, you didn't. Corinne.
Yes.
Now that I have thoroughly like taken up half the time with that uber long synopsis.
Yes.
Can you get us started in this much more petite episode 8?
That's nacho my problem. No, okay.
Yes. Oh, yes. Shit. Okay, well, I'll just go ahead and do it. You sit back and relax, and it'll be the Tamara Show today. That's great. Totally fine.
Welcome to the Tamara Show. Yeah. That's your theme song.
Mm. No, I think you could do better.
Oh, fine. Okay, fine. We're gonna table that, and I'm going to start off with the scene that I lovingly entitled Staying Out Till 6 a.m. with Cash.
Oh,
yeah. After Maya and Cash have their sizzling kiss of bestie betrayal.
Huh?
How do you like that? They are swept up in their feelings for each other and spend the evening and early morning walking around the city streets talking. When the sun comes up, Maya looks over at Cash and says, okay, I really should go. He responds, that's what you keep on saying. They both look at each other, falling silent. Maya turns to leave and Cash stops her. You know, we should really get to know each other more. Maya turns back around and says, I don't know. I want to, but what about Ainsley? I feel like I'd be destroying my friendship to date someone I don't even know. Cash is earnest. So let's get to know each other. No dating, just hanging out. Okay, Tam. So I know in the last episode we talked about this. If you and Larry broke up and I decided that it would be a great idea for us to date each other, you would come after me. But would you come after me if we weren't dating? We were just hanging out secretly behind your back?
I'm sure the look on my face says it all.
Gentle listeners, I am very glad that we are far apart from each other because her laser eyes would have burned me down. Just FYI.
Uh-huh.
So, seeing as how don't think that's the best idea.
It's not every day you find a man that'll watch 6 hours of Vanderpump Rules with you.
That's a keeper right there. Absolutely. Maya, however, because her connection with Cash is so sizzling, she cannot deny the feels. And Maya contemplates it, but she nixes it with a swiftness. No, no, no. I used to hang out with my married boss. Cash continues. I promise this would be completely platonic. I really think we should figure out whatever this is. Spend a little more time together. That's all I'm asking. Maya, desperate for a justification to spend time with Cash, reasons like we're researching to test the hypothesis that we should be together. Cash responds, exactly. See, you've already made it seem very unromantic. So can we see each other again? Maya agrees. Okay, but we're not going anywhere romantic, and I'm going to dress like I'm on my motherfucking period. Cash smiles.
Hot.
I know. Deal. They fist bump and part ways.
Maya makes it home before Ainsley is up, but as Maya enters her room after taking a shower, Ainsley is sitting on her bed and asks, were you hanging out with Cash last night? Maya is all full of, oh, shit. But Ainsley continues, Tony, too, texted me and said you were at a play with Cash. Maya scrambles, her brain hamster working the wheel, and totally casually, says, oh, yeah, Marcus got Andrew involved in this charity thing, and Cash was involved. Totally random.
Huh.
Ainsley asks, why didn't you tell me? I would have told you not to do it.
Gross.
I know. I'd be like, go ahead. You can keep talking and telling. I'm not listening. Maya explains, well, Marcus put a lot of work in on this project, and I wanted to be there to support him. Maya Marie Marmington, your tower of lies is going to come tumbling down. Enough of these shh secrets. Ainsley's confused. Thank you, Corinne, for that lovely little bit of writing. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Ainsley's confused. Oh, I thought you hated Marcus, Maya tells her. Well, I did at first, but then I don't know. I got to really like him over time, like when we first met Craig. Ainsley's face softens and she chuckles. Yeah. And I want to know what backstory there is there.
Uh-huh.
What happened with Craig? Uh-huh. Why didn't they like Craig at first, and now why is he their best friend?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And then Ainsley asks the really important question. Did Cash look bad? And Maya lies once again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think he's losing his hair. Mm. Maya turns back around to the dresser, her face guilt-ridden for the extreme lying she just did.
Mm-hmm.
And Ainsley makes absolutely no move to get up from Maya's bed. Nope. She's just going to hang out while Maya gets ready. Cool, 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 cool. I can totally keep this farce on forever about how I'm not in love with your ex-fiance. Beyonce. Ex-fiance. I tried to say boyfriend and fiance and it came out Beyonce.
Well, you know, I think we all wish that Beyonce was part of our lives. So I get it. Mm. I totally get it. But I would say that, you know, there are lies that you can kind of say about Cash looking bad, but his hair is not one of them.
Oh, no.
His hair's luscious like yours is. His hair is luscious like your dad's was. Like, it's just glorious, glorious mane of hair.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make him sound like Trump, please. Once everyone is back in the swing of the work week, several meetings take place. Zara and Craig meet with the smarmiest, most expensive publicist that Zara could find, and he asks her, what product would you like to endorse? After he nixes the flying car idea and tells her she needs to pick something real, Zara is left at a bit of an existential crisis. Who is she, and what product does exemplify her? Meanwhile, Andrew, much to Maya's chagrin, is going to vote on an anti-immigrant bill, even though he doesn't agree with it, so he can get support for his historical bridge restoration project. Yay!
Yay, that's hot. Wow. Uh-huh.
It just brings to mind bridges of Madison County, the covered bridges, the romance of it all.
Oh, that sounds way sexier. Yes, count me in. I'm totally on board. Because those are the important things that we need to focus on.
Look, he knows that Maya has an obsession with bridges and trying to tear up notes into the water. And if she finds an obscure enough bridge that Andrew is reviving, maybe she can finally do it instead of doing it over the River Thames, which did not get her very far at all.
That Andrew's such a giver. Yep.
I know. Bridges interrupt us. He's just trying to help her process her feelings, and I appreciate that about her. Him.
Bridges interrupt us.
Oh, so Maya gives him shit for the bridge project, but not for the bridge project, but for the anti-immigrant law, voting for it, but ultimately moves on, asking him if he wants to go to the royal debut of Lady Elaine, parentheses Fairchild, because if you ever watched Mr. Rogers, that's who Lady Elaine was, Lady Elaine Fairchild. And he says, yes, I'll be RSVP in a +2 this time. I'm going to be bringing Tony, my boyfriend, with me. Maya balks. Tony, too, is your boyfriend? Does he know that?
Ooh, Andrew, question there.
Andrew rolls his eyes at this because she doesn't know that after the play, Tony too spent the night and then stuck around for tea that Andrew initially tried to get Tony too to make, even though they were at Andrew's place. Fear not, gentle listeners, Tony too held firm, stared him down, and Andrew got the hint and put the motherfucking kettle on. And then we find out that Lady Elaine Fairchild is an orchid. This day is just full of surprises.
It's so funny because we've been a week out from our last recording because of our technical difficulties.
Yeah.
And for a split second, I'm like, he stuck around for tea? Ooh, what kind of term is that? What does sticking around for tea look like? Oh, yeah, it was just actually tea. In a kettle.
Yeah.
And he put the kettle on. Ooh, what's putting on the kettle? What kind of position is that? Oh, that's right. We're talking about tea. Damn it.
Tea. Yeah.
Another surprise comes when, across town in the financial district, Craig asks Cash, "Did you know that buying blood diamonds is a bad thing?" Corinne wrote, "Craig, seriously?" with a bunch of exclamation marks. Uh-huh. And I feel Craig on this because when I first heard of blood diamonds, I thought that was a color. I thought blood diamonds were like garnets, and they just like had a really unfortunate name. And quite possibly, like, worked them into a conversation or two until I figured out that they were a bad, bad thing. And you don't get them and you don't buy them. So, feel you on that, Craig. Cash is incredulous. Yeah, dude, the word blood didn't tip you off?
Uh-huh. Exactly. Hello?
And then Craig counters, as I would, "What about Bloody Marys? Am I not supposed to drink those as well?" All you gotta do, Craig, is watch that 60-minute special that talks all about blood diamonds, and it'll set you straight. Mm. Cash smartly changes the subject and shares, "There was a casting director at The Sound of Music, and they got me an audition." Craig is thrilled. "For what? Star Wars? A Marvel movie?" Cash responds excitedly, "A TV commercial for depression medicine." Craig matches his enthusiasm. "Just as cool! Just as cool!" and gives Cash a celebratory slap on the ass. Mm. I don't think I'd look at Cash in his Sound of Music role and automatically think, depression medicine.
Well, Captain Von Trapp, he has very depressed man vibes, so...
Yeah.
You know.
But we've already discussed how luscious his hair is. I'd be like, shampoo. Oh my God.
Yes.
Hair products all day long.
Uh-huh. Male grooming things, yes. Like...
Mm-hmm. He's got beautiful skin, like freaking male moisturizer.
I will buy whatever razor you want to sell me, Cash. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That evening, Cash and Maya meet to hang out, and as promised, Maya is dressed like she's on her period, wearing a comfy t-shirt, hoodie, and pants. Definitely pants. I'm hoping she went full throttle in her look and is wearing a baggy pair of sweats, but we don't see.
Yes.
Initially, they are in a more populated area of London, but Maya's paranoia takes over, so Cash suggests they hang out at Bashir's place, the most unromantic place in the world, as he DJs in the evening, so he won't be there. Bash gave Cash a key, so he lets himself into Bashir's apartment, but as opposed to the unromantic dump that was promised, there are candles everywhere, mood lighting, and flower petals scattered on the floor. Maya looks at Cash with a, "Seriously?" look, but Cash immediately says, "I had nothing to do with this." They silently wander down the hall, and Bash is on bended knee proposing, open ring box in hand, and Fatima's about to answer when she sees the two of them in the hall and says, "Cash?" To which Bashir, whose back is to the intruder, says, "No, my name is Bashir." Poor Bash got his special moment thwarted. Well, I guess that's finally the retribution Bash was begging Cash for stealing Fatima, his once upon a time love interest. But there was definitely no hard feelings after that snafu, because we see a montage of Maya and Cash hanging out at Bash's apartment, getting to know each other better over the ensuing days.
Mm. In Ainsley's world, she talks to Gemma about how things are awkward now between her and Bryce Thrice. And Gemma throws shade at Ainsley's design chops and also suggests that Ainsley has feelings for the man. Bryce Thrice, that is. Also, in Ainsley's world, she finally meets Maya's coworker, Marcus, and gets it in her head that Maya has a thing for him. In an enemies to lovers, I want to hate fuck you kind of way. And while it is true that Marcus and Maya have more of a zing between them than Maya and Duffy, there's about as much sexual tension between them as me and Tamara, a.k.a. none. At Lady Elaine Fairchild's coming out garden party, Andrew and Tony walk around the grounds of a beautiful estate. And Tony, too, is just thrilled to be one of the youngest people in the group, exclaiming, "I may just walk around without my shirt on." A look of panic flashes across Andrew's face and Tony placates him. "Relax, I'm just joking." Just then,
was he though? If he didn't give him that look, he might have been like, "What? What?"
He's like, "I brought some baby oil. Just oil me up. Oil me up. I want to glisten."
I saw it on a commercial with that guy Cash. Yeah, he was pushing this male moisturizer that's supposed to make you glisten, mm-hmm. like all
a disco ball. A disco ball.
Like a
Yes.
Like a shiny disco ball. Disco, 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 disco.
Just then, they're approached by Rupert, a tubby, weasel-faced man who says,
"Oh, Andrew, it's so nice to see you. I want to thank you for being brave and supporting my anti-immigration bill. You're lucky to be working for such a brave man," he says to Tony, too. Andrew clarifies, "No, no, Tony doesn't work for me. He's my date. This is Tony. He's a very talented interior designer." They shake hands and Rupert asks, "Tony, what do you think of the Lady Elaine orchid?"
We see the purple and white orchid, and Tony charmingly replies, "Oh, I love her. She's a high-maintenance lady, just like me."
And Rupert continues, "I'm so glad they went with a native plant instead of one of those, you know, foreign, invasive ones."
I went like Jamaican or something. I don't know. What the hell happened to my accent? It disappeared.
I was doing so good. "You simply can't leave those kinds of plants unattended. If you aren't careful, they'll just take over. Don't we have enough foreigners here without having to let their plants in, too?"
If he was less formal, he'd follow up with an, "Am I right? Am I right? Up top, bro." Tony narrows his eyes at Rupert.
"How can you say something like that? If you keep out all of the foreign plants, where on earth are you going to get a good cup of tea?"
Slam!
"We can hardly let a hard border ruin our tea time now, can we?"
he says with a fuck you smile on his face. And with that, Rupert dashes off to avoid his wife.
If I were his wife, I'd be avoiding him. "I will be staying at the country house, lovey, while you are over here."
Yes. And Andrew smiles softly at Tony, brushing a little something off of Tony's lapel. And they proceed arm in arm through the garden. And I was fucking surprised that Andrew didn't chastise Tony, too, for what he said. But he didn't. He was sweet about it. And I was like, good on you, Andrew.
Because he made good gosh darn points. Like, yeah, you want to talk about invasive plants taking over? Bitch, you and your country take over everything. So I wouldn't talk. Colonization, am I right?
Amen.
In an interesting turn of events, Cash and Craig are in a meeting where their boss men are talking about exploiting people for their money, and Cash glances at his phone, seeing a missed call from his casting director. He stupidly turns on his ringer, and when Cash and Craig are standing up to do their presentation on the African equities markets, Cash's phone goes off, and he apologizes. "Sorry, I have to take this." Craig is peeved but centers himself, saying, "Well, I guess I'll get started." Cash steps out of the meeting room, which is basically a fishbowl, clear glass on all sides, and takes the call. We don't hear what the person on the other end says, but can tell from the touchdown dance that Cash does that he got the commercial.
Yay!
As can all of his boss men. Cash composes himself, walks somberly back into the meeting, and states, "Ah, oh, sorry, death in the family." Cut to the end of the meeting, and Cash gets fired for leaving his business presentation to accept another job. Yikes. That evening, Cash is on a rooftop with Maya and shares the good/bad news with her. She congratulates him, and then Cash shares Bash and Fatima's wedding invitation and asks her to go. Maya's very reluctant. "Isn't that like something you take a girlfriend to?" He pish-poshes this. "This is a Muslim wedding. There's no alcohol, no slow dancing. It'll be like going on a date in the Footloose town. Except I'm sure there'll be lots of dancing as opposed to Footloose, just not the romantical kind." Maya counters, "Yeah, but we don't date. We're only hanging out." And Cash has had enough. "How long are we going to do this for? We've been hanging out for weeks." Maya responds, "Being with you is something I can't just casually do. If we get together, it's going to blow up, at minimum, my relationship with Ainsley and could also be my friend group. And that could be a relationship that doesn't last any longer than 6 months. Cash posits, "What if it does work out? It's all what ifs, and at a certain point, you have to make a decision if it's worth the risk." Cash blusters. Cash Posits and Cash Blusters.
I feel like there was an exchange in the middle that disappeared there.
Do you have it on your end or no?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought I might have just deleted it from my copy.
That's my bad. Sorry, gentle listeners.
I mean, honestly, though, like, so Cash says that he sounds like she makes a decision, which sounds like she doesn't want to pursue the hanging out because she doesn't want to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
But she has every single right. She has everything to lose and he doesn't.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's pushing the fact. But she's like, I would lose my best friend. I could potentially lose all of my friends. And what do you stand to lose? Nothing.
He stands to lose Maya.
I know, but I mean, if it didn't work out after six months, it would probably be more mutual than anything. So
yeah,
that's what that last little section said in a nutshell. So there.
And she leaves him.
Yes. Yeah. Leaves him on the rooftop, all full of what the fuck.
Yes. In a huff.
In a huff.
And we move from that to Gemma wrangling Duffy into coming with her to Thrice Bryce's. You see, Ainsley forgot her fabric swatches over there, and Gemma, being the good friend that she is, offered to pick them up. However, before she left, Ainsley quickly grabs a small potted plant, telling Gemma, "Ooh, and give him this plant. It only needs to be watered like once a year." Gemma takes the plant, takes Duffy, and they end up on Bryce's doorstep like two ODK evangelists.
Have you heard the good word of one dry kiss? Yo, though I walk through the valley of curse your sudden and but inevitable betrayal, I will fear no kiss tractor beam.
And I will seal the deal with one singular dry kiss. Thank you. Yes. When Bryce opens the door to Gemma and Duffy, who is holding up the plant like a sacred offering, the duo should have said, "Have you brought ODK into your heart? Home and listening ears." But instead, after Thrice Bryce tries to cut them off, saying, "I already give at church," Gemma asks for the fabric swatches and then asks to have a sweet little convo with Thrice Bryce. And I'm so curious as to what she says. And you can find out after the break.
And we're back. What does she say? What does she say? "You best take my best friend back. She wants to have a relationship with you, and you would be lucky to have somebody like her." That's not what she says. And I'll tell you exactly what she does say. Oh, actually, we don't. It says verbatim, and we don't find out what she says. Well, that was disappointing. But we do find out that Tony 2 and Andrew's relationship is going a bit different than expected. After the Lady Elaine party, Andrew is riding high, effusing to Tony 2 about how much everyone loved him and how Tony 2 got more attention than Lady Elaine. Don't think she didn't notice. However, the triumph is short-lived when, as they're walking down a hip street chatting, they run into Tony 1 with his passel of friends, and Tony 2 introduces Andrew as his quote-unquote friend. Tony 1 is as obnoxious as ever, and Andrew looks a little wounded but brushes the incident off. This is until a few evenings later when they're out for Caribbean food, and Tony 2 insists, "We need to talk. Oh, we don't need to eat." Fuck me, I am so like, can't do accents tonight. I am so sorry. I mean, I'm not sorry, sorry, not sorry, but I'm not going to attempt accents because I don't even know what that sounded like that I was trying to do. So everyone's American. "We don't need to eat here." And Andrew is committed. "No, no, of course we will. You're always talking about how everything is about my culture, so I'm happy to take in a bit of yours." He peruses the menu. Oh, they use the tail. How resourceful. Using all parts of the animal. Tony, too, swiftly changes the subject to a more uncomfortable one. "I don't think we should see each other anymore. I can fit into your world, but I'm afraid you can't fit into mine." Andrew's puzzled and tries to refute this, but Tony, too, apologizes and leaves a very puzzled Andrew sitting in his Caribbean restaurant wondering, "How did I get here?" When the days go by, but the water flowing, once in a lifetime, water flowing
all around. And in the perfect measure of a passage of time, 3 weeks and 300 Adele songs later, Andrew sits in his office, back turned towards the door, looking off into the distance, absolutely and stoically
gutted.
Maya enters, asking him, "You got an invitation for dinner celebrating Lord Whitmore. Is that a man or a flower?" Andrew, not turning, states,
"Don't be ridiculous. It's a female horse."
Of course. I figured that one out. Like, I was like, yeah, sure. Lord Whitmore is a female horse. Uh-huh.
Those Brits and their sense of humor with naming things.
Maya responds, "Of course. Will you be bringing a plus one?" And Andrew states,
"That won't be necessary. Not that it's anyone's business, but we parted ways a couple of weeks ago."
Maya expresses her sympathy. "Oh, Andrew, I'm so sorry." Andrew whirls around in his chair, declaring,
"About what? I'm over it. Tony too? More like, Tony who?"
Maya states, "You didn't think Andrew Aldridge was really funny when he said..."
I did laughing. The first couple times I read that. I'm sorry.
Maya states,
"It's like the third time."
We have not read... We did not get this far in the script. This is all... fresh.
I was talking about when I read it, reread it, and then watched the movie with it. I'm sorry, you're acting like it's your joke. It's not. It's Andrew's.
I know, but I know you love a play on words. That's all.
Yeah.
Maya states, "I'm really glad you told me. I'm really glad you told me. I'm seeing him tomorrow night." Andrew quickly perks up.
"Really? Why?"
"Oh, I don't care." Maya explains that he's going to Craig's game night. Andrew gets petty.
"Oh, who's Craig? His sexy new boy toy? Well, you can tell him and Craig that they both can go to hell."
Maya clarifies. "No, Craig is my friend and he's married." Andrew quickly does take backs and says,
"Oh, well, in that case, better not say anything, I guess."
Your Andrew impression is on point, Corinne.
Oh, thank you. Man, I've done so much synopsizing. Have you seen these paragraphs that I've just been like, jab.
Yes. Here in the front row for all of it.
Oh.
And now the moment has arrived for our third wedding. Yay! We see a beautiful red and gold wedding invitation that says, "In the name of Allah, the most beneficent and most merciful, the honor of your presence is requested at the wedding of Bashir and Fatima, June 8th, 2019, Scion Park Hotel." And then we see Maya sitting at her dressing table, holding the invitation and silently crying.
Oh.
She puts it into her dressing table drawer just as Ainsley knocks on the door and enters, saying, "Hey, I'm heading over to Craig and Zara's early." She trails off as she sees Maya, who quickly turned around to look at her, pasting a pleasant smile on her ruddy, wet with tears face. Ainsley asks, "Are you crying?" And Maya responds, "Oh, I was just thinking about all the dogs in the world who will never get adopted." Ainsley looks confused and responds, "Yeah, that's really sad. Are you sure you're okay?" Maya responds, "Yeah, I'm fine. Go on ahead to Craig's. I'll be there in a little bit." At Craig's apartment, Zara is doing a cooking tutorial with Nigel, her social media manager, as Craig watches on. Zara pulls some Yorkshire. Thank you. I know how to say this. I don't know why my tongue is mad at me today. Yorkshire puddings out of the oven and says, "Just like my nan used to make on cold winter mornings." Craig questions me. "I thought you said your nan died in a knife fight at a Sex Pistols concert before you were born." Craig quickly is chastised by Nigel. Here and they go for a part two, but I'm guessing that's ruined as well, as immediately Ainsley lets herself into Zreg's apartment and starts talking with Craig. When Craig asks why Maya isn't with her, Ainsley responds, "You know, she's been really out of it lately. I would say she was having boy problems, but she would have told me." Craig reflects on this and says, "You know, Duffy mentioned that Maya had written a love letter but didn't name the person that she was talking about." Ainsley's brain hamster is working on that wheel, and suddenly she knows. Bing! Oh, my geez! She has an unrequited love for Marcus?
No.
She explains to Craig, it makes so much sense. She always gets so mad when I bring him up. I thought it was because I was super annoying, but it turns out I'm super perceptive. Sure, Jan, sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. She loves Marcus. Totally. That's what's happening right now. Yes.
I'm like, you're super keyed into your best friend there. Do you even know her and who she is? Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. That is Nacho best friend.
No. Way to bring it all around. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Need to make up for all the fucking speaking snafus I'm having this episode. La 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 la. Cooperate tongue. La 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 la.
Look, just because I made everything a tongue twister for you doesn't mean that you should be having any problems, okay?
Right. Unique New York. Unique New York.
So that evening, as Maya, Ainsley, Duffy, Gemma, Tony 2, Zara, and Craig awkwardly pose around a game of Connect Four for Zara's social media, there's a ding-dong. And who is at the door but surprise, Duffy! That's what I originally wrote. And then I said, nope, not Duffy, that's a typo. Ainsley says, hey Maya, why don't you get the door? With an unspoken winky winky. And Maya looks at her confused because she heard the winky winky and she's like, what the fuck is going on here? Why are you talking to me like that? It's a little off-putting. But she gets to the door and surprise! Okay, this time I'm right. It's Marcus! Marcus smiles smarmily at Maya and Maya asks, surprised, hi, what are you doing here? Marcus responds happily, your friend Ainsley said I had to come. I think she's into me. Oh, Marcus. Which admittedly makes more sense than Maya being into him, but I have a feeling we're in for a whole night of awkward, and Maya is now really wishing she'd gone to Bashir's wedding instead of this motherfucking game night. But, oh no, but there's more. This game night is just a shit show of unrivaled proportions. Zara is freaking out because they don't have enough chairs for everyone, because they broke chair number 8 with vigorous sex, and Zara makes Craig promise, no more people, we're simply not equipped. Craig agrees, no more people. And then, surprise, surprise, Andrew walks through the slightly ajar front door with a bottle of wine, announcing, I'm here for game night.
Wait a second, because nowhere in that scene did Maya invite Andrew over to game night.
Correct, but she did tell him about game night.
Yeah, not, hey, you want to come over to my friend Craig's house for game night? No, she said, I'm going to game night with Tony at my friend Craig's house.
I think that once Marcus got on the game night train, he's like, it is time for me to prove that I can be one of the friends.
Yes. No. This is not a get on the friend train. Choo choo. Andrew, we're leaving the station. Get on aboard. No.
And
I thought that was kind of shitty and not acknowledged at all, because I'd be like, excuse me? What are you doing here?
Well, and Tony too does ask, what are you doing here? And Andrew replies in a lying liar pants, fire pants. Maya invited me. She thinks I'm fun and that I'd fit in well with your group of friends.
Lies.
Lies. Andrew aloofly replies. Okay, Tony 2 does not believe this for a hot second. So this has nothing to do with me. Andrew aloofly replies. No, I love games. I love to play. He picks up a game box and looks at Scattergories. And Tony 2's eye says, bullshit. Everybody knows it's Scattergories, but he doesn't say anything. In a different room, Maya has pulled Ainsley and Craig aside and asks, why did you invite Marcus? Ainsley explains, because you like him, duh. I know you don't want to be judged for dating another coworker, but Marcus is so very different and also very single in contrast to Senator McCheaty Pants. Plus,
oh, Bainsley, if you even knew.
I mean, he is a better choice from that stance. Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I bet sex with Senator McCheaty Pants is much more fun than sex with Marcus. But, you know.
Oh, I don't even want. I don't know why, but I don't want to picture that. There's nothing wrong with Marcus, but he's just so ugh.
Ainsley continues, she has justified Marcus being a better choice than Senator McCheaty Pants.
Sure, 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 sure.
Yeah, 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 right? And then she says, you were out until 6 p.m. the night of the play. You had to be with Marcus all that time, right? Maya's trapped. Her brain hamster is scrambling and not finding a good resolution, and she can see that the only way out is through. So she admits with a grimace, yes, I like Marcus.
So convincing.
I know, super convincing. I was like, do these people know her at all? Ainsley and Craig enthusiastically high-five each other while Maya looks into the other room as Marcus hacks a mystery food item into his hand. Hot, am I right?
Yeah. So Ainsley tries to push Maya and Marcus into conversation, which goes about as well as you might expect. Nowhere. And the evening moves on to a bad game of charades where Andrew puts in obscure political figures so no one can guess who it is or gesture clues for it. Finally, they move on to another game, a Zara original, Nosecretes. I mean, no secrets. A game where you prove you know everything about everyone. As secrets were what almost tore Zara and Craig apart forever, Zara declares, there's enough pieces for everyone, so as long as no one else comes along, we'll be fine. And then, ding dong, the doorbell rings. Zara is pissed. That better be a Jehovah's Witness! She opens the door to Bryce Thrice, who was invited by Gemma and Duffy to game night when they dropped off the plant and picked up the fabric swatches. Zara is beside herself and demands, everyone just pick partners! Now, this is the kind of game they have on Love Island,
yes.
Or in this world, Love Chalet. Mm-hmm. Contestants play to stir up shit, but it surprisingly is going quite well, all things considered. Bryce Thrice knows that Ainsley's first true love was Adam Brody from the OC. It is revealed that Marcus made it to the top 1500 on X Factor by singing the song, The Boys Are Back in Town. But he doesn't know a damn thing about Maya, who apparently hates to lose. Gemma knows, in spite of Duffy pretending he's wrong and saying his favorite book is Moby Dick, that his favorite book is actually Dragon Master 7. And she has receipts. When Duffy protests, Gemma corrects, oh, no, 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 he's lying. It's that porno dragon book. She pulls it out of his satchel and he confesses, okay, it's my favorite book, but it's not porn. The dragon had to take the princess's virginity to be able to fly.
Ew, ew,
sure,
ew.
Sure, 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 ew. Sure, 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 sure. And Senator McCheaty Pants's dick just fell into the dog walker, sure. When Andrew asks Tony 2 if he knew what his greatest heartbreak was, Tony 2 sarcastically replies, ah, the death of Margaret Thatcher. Andrew smiles and says, no, while tragic, that is not my greatest heartbreak. This isn't a really good thing to share in a room full of strangers at a party, but I was once with a man named Ronald Clark. But I was too concerned about my public persona to go public with my relationship. Instead, I broke things off with him, and then he died in a plane crash. And when I found out, I realized that I had made the biggest mistake of my life.
Aww.
I often wonder how much someone should risk for love, and the older I get, the more I believe the answer is everything.
Aww.
Andrew looks around the room of people moved by his story and all caught in their own personal thoughts, and he apologizes. I'm sorry for ruining the party. I should go home. Tony, too, tries to stop him. Please stay. But Andrew insists, I really must go. And he leaves.
Ooh, that was like such a touching story. I was like,
I know. I didn't think he had it in him.
Me neither. The next section is called Magic Saris But No Fashion Montage. Womp,
what?
Womp, womp. I know. We have been cheated. However, Andrew's words had affected more than one person. Maya ditched out on game night, which sounds like my own personal version of hell, game night, because they play so many games, like so many games. We saw them do at least three, and I was just like, I'm one and done, baby. Like, let's just get the fuck out of here and I'll hang out in the backyard while the rest of you do your thing. But I know it's like Tamara's fantasy.
Meow. Give me yes. game nights all day long. At least 4 or 5.
Anyhow, Maya turns up to Bashir and Fatima's wedding, runs into Cash's little brother, Asif, and Fatima's little sister. Maya is wearing a glittery black dress, but Asif tells her, you can't go in the wedding looking like that. And Fatima's little sister says, and she's like, I don't know, I would say like 12, 13 or so.
Yeah.
She looks like she's about a year or two older than Asif. Fatima's little sister says with a glint in her eyes, don't worry, I've got you. And apparently pulls Maya into an emergency wedding sari closet because next thing we know, we see Maya looking beautiful in a pink sari with gold embroidery all over it. Maya is there just in time to see Fatima and Bashir sitting next to each other, blindfolded with a mirror in their lap. Fatima's little sister explains that this tradition lets them see each other for the first time as a married couple. Their blindfolds are released and they look into the mirror adoringly at each other. Confetti showers from the sky and Maya looks on at the magical moment and then looks to her right and Cash and Maya make eye contact across the room from each other. They run slow motion into each other's arms and hug each other and do lots of dancing and are filled with joy. Not bed dancing, though. And are filled with joy at being in each other's presence.
Meanwhile, Ainsley's noticed that Maya is missing from game night and she goes over to Marcus, who is standing by himself out on the balcony. She asks him, where's Maya? But he doesn't know. But what he does know is that the two of them are adults and they should put aside these childish games. And he goes in for a kiss with Ainsley, who does not reciprocate it. She exclaims, ew, no, you're supposed to be interested in Maya. He's puzzled. Maya? She's a genderless adversary in my eyes. Ainsley doubles down. Well, she likes you and I wouldn't do that to her. And she leaves Marcus standing outside. Then she has a talk with Gemma and Duffy in the guest room, asking them, why did you invite Thrice Bryce? Duffy responds, clearly you like him. When he showed up, you made him a plate full of apps. You've never done that for me.
Ooh.
Ainsley admits, okay, fine. So maybe I'm slightly attracted to Bryce. Thrice Bryce happens to be passing by the room and hears Ainsley mention his name. He pauses as she continues. I didn't move to London to be with an old American guy with no style or culture. I could have stayed in Texas and dated one of my dad's friends. Upon hearing that, Bryce leaves, and Ainsley continues her no thrice Bryce justification to Gemma and Duffy. He is literally the opposite of Cash, Gemma and Duffy say together.
Yes, exactly!
Game night is crumbling, and it has lost another participant because Tony, too, also disappears into the night, only to show up at Andrew's doorstep and confesses, I lied to you. I didn't break it off with you because you won't fit in with my friends. Because, well, you don't. But I like you. A lot. You're smart, sophisticated, and you smell good like Christmas trees. The real reason I broke up with you is that I'm not here legally. Don't have papers in the bill you're voting on. Votes to get rid of me. Oh, my God.
Oh, Tony, too.
Not Tony, too.
Yeah, and Ainsley apparently has bad hiring practices, but Tony, too. Oh.
I know, that is surprising, seeing that she's from Texas. So.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that Tony, too, grew up in Britain, but he just, you know, yeah.
Yep.
Another startling revelation occurs after Marcus, who is still on the balcony, gives Maya a call, trying to let her down easy. Okay, Marcus, yes, you've broken my heart. Bye.
Yeah. Sure. Okay, are we done? Are we gonna go? Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah. She is trying to have a conversation about how Andrew's story of love lost had her seizing the day, but Marcus is blowing up her motherfucking phone. Thinking it's a random work emergency, she answers it and immediately has regerts. Because the conversation is awkward as fuck. look. He lets her know that there is nothing between them, even though she has many good qualities, like how punctual she is. Maya is completely confused by this. And then whenever I want to talk you up, I'm like, okay, but Tamara, remember, you are punctual. You are punctual. You are punctual.
I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, I'm on time.
And that's Nacho something to sneeze at. Uh-huh. Yes. Maya is completely confused by this. And then Asif announces to Maya and Cash, come on, you lovebirds. They're cutting the cake. Marcus is now super confused. Are you at a wedding? Maya quickly gets off the phone with him. I gotta go. This has been weird. And Marcus wanders confused into the now practically empty apartment, save for the couple, Zreg. Craig asks, what are you still doing here? As he's in the process of cleaning the kitchen, Marcus is pissed. Why would you invite me here and tell me Maya has a crush on me when she clearly doesn't? Craig apologizes. I'm sorry, man. I thought she did. Marcus responds, well, she just told me she doesn't, and she's currently at a wedding with another guy. You love games so much. How about the game Sorry? Like, I'm saying, say it to me. And then he leaves in a huff.
In a huff!
However, Craig is now puzzling over things, and I just barely noticed he did the entire game night in a three-piece suit.
The fuck?
But that is beside the point. The point is, his brain hamster has pulled out the murder board and is piecing together anonymous love note. Maya is not into Marcus, but did stay out until 6 a.m. after Cash's play. And she is currently at a wedding. And tonight, Bashir and Fatima wed tonight. The pieces of red string come together and connect. Cash and Maya in a big red heart. And Craig says under his breath, oh, shit.
Oh, shit is right. As is the next section, which Corinne lovingly labeled, the shit is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. And in an ill-advised profession of love, Ainsley goes to Thrice Bryce's house and gives him backwards compliment after backwards compliment to say that she wants to be with him, essentially saying, you're a lot older than me, but I can rise above that. And yeah, you aren't into culture things, like, but you're a good person, so Thrice Bryce, I will give you the honor of dating me. Not so much in those words, but you get the gist. A slightly bemused and slightly bitter expression flits across his face as he says, that sucked, and I'm not interested. She looks at him with her puppy dog eyes and says, but I thought it was romantic. He responds with, why would I want to be with somebody who thinks I'm too old and not cultured enough to be with? And shuts the door in her face. Mm. Back at Sreg's, Zara comes out of the bedroom and Craig tells her,
oh, wait. If somebody, like, you're single, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hot guy number five, whatever, knocks on your door and you open it and he's like, Tamara, you don't really have a great sense of style, but I can look beyond that because you're a really good person. And I feel like, you know, you're a little schlubby for me, but like, I think that we can make a go of this. Would you be like, that's so romantic?
No. And I'll tell you why, Corinne. It reminds me of one time when I broke up with Dan for a spell during our uber long relationship. I was talking to a guy, and for some reason, when I was young and stupid, I would ask guys like what they thought of me, like, oh, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give me? And it was always 7, which I don't know why the fuck I did that. Like, why the fuck do I care? Anyways, so one of the guys that I was dating in between Dan and Dan, I asked him that.
But I bet Larry thinks you're a 10, just saying.
That's a part of the story too. So yeah. He was like 7, and I was like, okay. And I was like, why 7? He goes, yeah, you could lose a little weight. I weighed 165 pounds at the time. Yeah. Suffice to say that I was not with him after that night and stopped asking that goddamn question. Cut to a couple of weeks ago with Mr. Larry, and he was telling me, he's like, he was kind of like not saying this in so many words, but he was like, I love you so much. Like, it's like crazy how much I love you. And I don't think mm-hmm. there's ever been anybody in the world that has loved you as much as I do. If you left, like, and we broke up, then you probably wouldn't find anybody that loves you as much as I do. And I was I probably would.
Just saying.
I said, I probably would, because I don't want to be with somebody that's not 1,000% into this.
So yeah,
there's
100%.
Even one little iota of I don't like this, or this isn't working for me, or I'm just not into whatever.
Yeah.
Then I shut that shit down and I move on to the next.
Yeah.
So he was kind of like trying to make this really like lovely proclamation of love. And I'm like, yeah, I could probably find it with somebody else somewhere else. And, but not like not that I want to, and not that I'm saying like I got it like that. But I'm just like, that's what I want in a relationship.
Yes.
You have to like me and be all about me, like 1,000%.
Yeah.
Not like all about me, but just like that's what I need in a relationship. And that's what I go for.
Yeah.
I would slam the door too. I would slam the door too.
You're not going for, you know, the stocking show. You don't need a relationship like in you.
Nope. Nope. Back at Zreg's, Zara comes out of the bedroom and Craig tells her, "You're not going to believe what I have to tell you." And Zara says, "I have something to tell you too." Earlier that evening, after 99% of the guests had gone home, Zara had confessed to Craig that her game night in Yorkshire pudding social media content were a bust and that nobody liked her game. I sure did, but it sure as hell wouldn't want to play it.
100%.
No scripts. She's upset to see her 15 minutes of fame slipping away and cries. Love Chalet is a distant memory now that celebrity prostitute starts tonight.
That is a line directly from the show.
Celebrity prostitute. What the fuck? This game was supposed to be my legacy. In that moment, Craig was comforting her, but now that their house is 100% guest-free, Zara has recovered and has no more tears, excitedly stating to Craig, "I'm pregnant!" And Craig, who thought his news couldn't possibly be topped, is suddenly infused with joy at the thought of being a parent with Zara and bringing a new light into the world, the light being the baby. The end!
Woo!
All right! Corinne, do you want to get into our relationship ratings?
The relationship rundown, down. Yeah, I'm here for it. Let's go for Ainsley and Maya.
Shh, secrets.
So many secrets. And also, like, okay, Maya, she's secreting all over the place. And then Ainsley is completely missing the mark in all areas of friendship. Their relationship right now is I don't know if I do two dry kisses or one dry kiss, but it's just like it is missing.
Yeah. It's getting a little sloppy in there. It's funny because I think that Ainsley is totally off base about her and Cash because she cannot even fathom that those two would ever be together,
mm-hmm.
which makes it icky that Maya's still with Cash because, you know, it's Cash and she loves him, but still just, it sucks that Ainsley is scrambling, trying to figure out what's going on with Maya, and Maya is completely pulling the wool over her eyes.
Yeah.
I'm going to give them 2.5 dry kisses because they're still friends. They're mm-hmm. still looking out for each other to an extent, but just really failing at it royally.
Yes.
And yeah, they're just, it's like a speeding train to a brick wall and the shit's going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And I just am so afraid for that moment.
Ugh. I know. I want besties to be together forever. I'm not looking forward to whatever is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who do you choose for relationship rundown next?
I'm going to say Ainsley and Bryce. Before, they were a snooze fest. I did not care about them, but I was pleasantly surprised when Ainsley was bashing him and then was like, "Oh my God, I love him." And then went to him and he was like, "Fuck you." That kind of put Bryce back in my good graces where I was like, "Oh, okay. That's a terrible way to start liking somebody." But sadly, that's what happened. So I'm going to give them a 3 for potential.
Thrice Bryce, he got a backbone, and I'm here for the three as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose next Duffy and Gemma.
Do you notice how Gemma keeps stringing Duffy into her little responsibilities or mm-hmm. keeps finding reasons to see him, be around him, talk to him?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, something's bubbling under the surface.
Yeah, I feel like they're simmering, you know, like there's a little simmering going on there. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm not going to give them a number of dry kisses. I'm going to give them a big old plate of nachos, and you could take that as you, as however you want. Oh. I'm giving them the nacho plate. Yep.
Mm, I like it. I'm here for the nacho plate. But I will say that this nacho plate, it's got like the pickled jalapenos on it. It's got the cheese on it, but it's lacking like the sour cream and the guacamole, the bean dip.
Mm-hmm. So it's a scarce plate of nachos. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there's still something under the surface, but there's nothing on top is what you're saying.
Yeah. It's not fully fleshed out. It's not a fully realized plate of nachos, you know.
Right. Some ingredients are definitely missing indeed. Yes. But yes. You know what it is. You mm-hmm. see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
You call it what it is. It's a plate of nachos, but it's just not. You got to send it back to the kitchen and they need to add some more shit to it.
Yes, but it would be a shame if it got dumped over the balcony, you know.
Oh, fair point. Yes. By Duffy, nonetheless.
Ooh.
What about Tony and Andrew?
Ooh. Oh.
Unbreak my heart. Say you love me again.
And again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. It went from like a strong 5 dry kiss at Lady Elaine Fairchild's orchid debut to a sad 1 dry kiss after they parted ways. And now I think we're at a 3.5 dry kiss.
Yeah, I'd agree. The one thing is like, well, it's above average for me because they're changing each other's lives, it seems mm-hmm. like. Like,
yeah.
Tony is causing Andrew to see things differently. Like, I am not just an immigrant or something on a bill. I am a person.
Yes.
That you are voting against. And at the same time, like, Andrew's confessions of love helped Tony to see him as a much deeper, not so superficially mm-hmm. political piece of cardboard person. So,
yes.
I mean, that speech that Andrew said at game night, like, caused everybody to scatter and go, like, find love.
Mm-hmm.
So 3.5 for them as well. I agree.
I almost left during the when you gave me the speech because I was going to go out in the corner and be like, hello, hello, anybody? I'm ready. Can anybody give me somebody to love? Yes. Okay, Maya and Cash.
Oh. Their relationship is just marred by one teeny tiny secret. Just a little indiscretion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the romance of lies. Yes.
Yep. For some reason, I'm having a hard time with this because it almost feels like it went down in this episode for me. Like when they kissed at the theater one, I was like, finally. And now that they're like, but we're not going to date. We're just going to hang out. And I'm like, now you're deluding yourselves and you're like lying to yourselves. And I can understand the thought process and the mentality around like, we're not going to do anything quote unquote wrong. We're just going to have an emotional affair instead of a real one. But it made it feel uckier to me. So mm-hmm. Even though I'm wishing the best for them, I'm going to give them like a below average 2.75.
I understand when they had the conversation and Maya was like, hey, I would be risking it all for you. I understand why they're like taking the time to get to know each other. because she's like, hey, if we get to know each other and it's like a nothing burger, then I don't want to have risked everything for that. So if they get to know each other more, then she'll have more of like a basis for putting herself out there and the order of her bestie betrayal and just like blowing everything up. But I do think that she is full of bestie betrayal, and which is the big reason why Ainsley and Maya's relationship got such low dry kisses. But I would say that at the end, Maya is like claiming it and she's like, no, I'm here. We're going for the thing. I am fully diving into a relationship with you, basically. That's what I thought, anyways, her going to the wedding was sort of symbolic of.
Yeah.
And they have, like, the strongest connection, the most zazazoo of all of the couples. I am giving them 3.75 dry kisses.
I think my thought process behind the lower rating is that, say that wedding never happened, that they just hung out, and then Maya was like, this is too risky, I need to cut and run. If Ainsley found out that they were hanging out under her nose, I think she would be equally hurt. Like, I think she would probably be more hurt than when she found out Craig was still friends with him, because she'd be like, you don't even know him, why the fuck are you hanging out with him, and you hung out with him for how long? Yeah. And she would ultimately find out that it was because they had feelings for each other. And then she would still be just as hurt because her friend was entertaining a notion of being romantic. Yeah. And it would probably fare much worse because it was all for nothing and she knew it. And so she was like, well, you're risking my friendship for nothing. So that sucks just as much as if she found out they were sleeping together and in love.
Oh, it's a full on act of bestie betrayal. I completely agree with you. And Tamara, I just want to assure you that we are not going to be doing that.
Because then you would not your best friend. I am not your best friend if you do that.
Samesies, if you were to do that to me. Now, mind you, I just have an imaginary boyfriend at this moment in time. But still, yeah, Maya's making mad moves. And I understand, and I'm not into it, too. So, there you go.
Yeah, same.
And, of course, Zreg is fine. They're
five. Five, five, yeah, five. Five, well, five, five. Yeah. Four and a half, because she needs to cut that social media bullshit. and her publicist. Oh, Lord.
Whoa, that guy. Yeah. No kidding. All right. So I think that we've covered everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do we have coming up next week?
If Tamara can stop watching Vanderpump Rules and get her ass to do her notes, we will be doing episode 8 of Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yay! No, you mean 9.
Ah, fuck me. See? I am one session behind because I can't stop watching. We will be doing episode 9 of Four Weddings and a Funeral.
I am so interested to see what's going to happen next because I think that there's just some shit that's going to be hitting that fan. And if you have anything you'd like to say about what's going on, any of the couples, relationship rundown thoughts, bestie betrayal thoughts, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on the social medias, Instagram and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. And then he leaves in a huff. Do you want to do in a huff or?
Oh, I'm on a slight delay. I'm so sorry. In a huff. I wrote entirely too much. So if you need to cut any of this, if it's not relevant, because I really did a fucking number on it. God bless.
It's your time to shine, Tam. It's your time to shine.